listening to the Save the Marriage podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, this is Lee Baucom, and you are on the Save the Marriage podcast. Thank you for being here. I know that your time is important. And right now, what we're doing with that time that you give us is to focus back on the basics. This is a back to basics series where we talk about kind of paring it all down to the simplest place to start, how to understand the process. And over the last few weeks, we started with what went wrong. And then we moved through what do you do? Well, now we're looking at it from a place of where your own conviction comes in and where your own motivation crosses over, because many times it's not enough for people to understand how to do it. Many times people get sidetracked. They start the process and somewhere along the way, it falls apart. The other day, I had a conversation with someone who was telling me how they really thought that they wanted to save their marriage, but over time, they realized that they haven't been doing much. And they started by telling me that they had read my system, but nothing had seemed to shift. And so I asked the simple question, what have you done? Not what did you read? Reading is not going to get you anywhere. It's what's your actions? How do you move forward with that? And that's where they had gotten stuck. And as we talked a little bit further, I think the reason that they were stuck was because of what we're going to talk about today. They weren't clear on their why. So what happens is, this is just kind of frame today's discussion. This is not just about back to basics. This is about back to what matters. And that's what derails people. Not being clear about what matters in this, not being clear about where they want to move forward. And so when the crisis keeps going, now understand that there is a difference between that moment that a lot of people talk about as D-Day, right? When the spouse first says, I'm thinking about a divorce, or I don't love you, the D's that come out, I don't love you, I want a divorce, we don't want to keep doing this, I didn't think it would be like this. All of those pieces roll together into D-Day, the detonation point, when you thought everything was at least moving forward or okay or stable, or it hit the pause button and we're waiting to come back from that, and suddenly you realize that things are not that way, that things are in a much deeper crisis than you knew. So that's the crisis point. And in the middle of a crisis, we tend to do one of two things. We either freeze or we flail. When we freeze, we just don't do anything. You know, we just are frozen like a deer in headlights. But flailing is when we kind of flail around trying to get away. Part of what we're trying to do is find a way past the crisis. Here's the problem. Crisis becomes chronic pretty quickly. Sure, it's a crisis still overall, but it feels very chronic. It's like, you know, I woke up yesterday feeling pretty rotten about how the relationship was and feeling like I wanted to do something. Today, I woke up again feeling kind of rotten, but now I'm exhausted and I don't know whether I can even take action or not. That's the place where the crisis can cause doubt, it can cause despair and hopelessness, and it can cause fear. It's not real good for us to have a fearful doubt or a fearful despair and hopelessness that we don't know how to move forward. Those are paralyzing pieces. And what they trigger in many people is a give up response. You just go like, ah, it's not even worth it. And this is where the relationship really can pivot. One pivot is towards working on things and stabilizing the crisis and getting focused and making sure that you're following the pieces of the puzzle I talked about of how to connect with a spouse and how to change yourself and create a new path. Those are the three C's approach. And you have to do that by being calm, constant, consistent, and taking courageous action. But when you hit the give up response, nothing happens. You just give up. One person told me that they had been at that place of giving up. In fact, they found that all they were doing was going to work and going to bed. There was nothing else going on in life. Not only that, but it was too tempting to escape into either mindless shows on TV or the endless cups of wine that were in the evening, the glasses of wine that just kept refilling. And in the process, they realized that days were passing and then weeks were passing and then a month and a half had passed and nothing had changed in their approach to the relationship, but the relationship itself had begun to deteriorate even further. That's the nature of the give-up response. So we have to have some way of talking back to that give-up response. So just for a moment, without trying to bring too much fear into this, I want to get us focused on why does this matter? What's important about this? Because what I want you to be clear about is the endpoint of this is saving a marriage. Why save a marriage? Why go through that? Why not just say, hey, it hurts too much. I'll just numb it down. I'll just hide from this. I'll wait for it to pass. I'll hunker down and wait for the crisis to get better. And yet it doesn't. And here's why. The first thing is the ripple effect. A lot of times people reduce the divorce to the two of them. Two people going their separate ways. My childhood was marked with my uncle and my aunts doing multiple marriages and divorces, and in two of those families having multiple kids affected by it. I saw the effect. I saw the pain. I saw the way it tore the family apart, and I realized it had very little in the end to do with those two people. Because sure, if there are two people that have no other relationship, if they were in a vacuum and they went their separate ways, it only affects the two of them. But I noticed the effect it had on my cousins. I noticed the effect it had on my parents watching their siblings go through that. I noticed the effect it had on my grandparents trying to figure out how to be a part of the family that was being pulled apart and what to do with their allegiances. What I didn't know is on the outside were the ripples that went through their family. Their friends, their work colleagues, their social events, their churches, all of the other places, because everywhere there's an anchor point with that person, suddenly it's cast into doubt. The ripple effect is pretty immediate with the kids. One of the things kids need is a very stable idea of what family is and who is family. And in a divorce, everything they've always known about family is suddenly blown apart. That's a major ripple effect. Lots of people, as they're deciding to get divorced, look for research that'll back them up that their kids will be okay. Now, let me be very clear. Kids can be okay and still be affected by something. In other words, kids are resilient enough that as adults, they'll move through it. It's not going to stop them. Very often, sometimes it's detrimental, but a lot of times it's just for them a disruption. They've got to figure out what to do. That doesn't mean it has no effect. I've got cousins who are very successful, and yet at the same time, I watch that they are still caught in the web of the family relationships. I watch others as they go through the divorce, and the kids have major effects. Not only that, but when I was dealing with people who were getting married, I did a lot of premarital counseling, and they would come in and they would tell me that one of the big pieces that had them concerned about getting married was that their parents had not stayed married. In other words, they had become defensive about the possibility of a marriage happening. In fact, I talked with a lot of people who said, you know, I'm just not going to get married because I saw what happened with my parents. In other words, while they were functional in their life and while they were doing fine in lots of different ways, that doesn't mean they were unaffected by that. Somewhere along the way, there was a disruption. Then I'll watch the grandparents who are not sure how to relate to these people, to the ex, to the ex's family, how to relate with the fact that the kids are now in a different place. So I watch the parents of the people getting divorced, not just the kids, but now the parents. And also you watch the community not sure what to do. People aren't sure which friends to hold on to and which ones they have to let go of and where they belong and where they no longer belong. And sometimes it goes down to even the way they did activities together, and suddenly they have to find different ways of being. That's a large ripple effect. So the first one is just the social ripple effect that comes from that. The second one is the emotional impact. Most people think that if they're getting a divorce, what they're moving towards is feeling better, getting out of the crisis, getting out of the hurt and the pain. And they underestimate how painful it is to go through that process. When the court system puts a versus between two people's names, they mean it. It's oppositional. And as much as I've talked about how you need to come together as a we in order to save a relationship, in some ways, even if you never quite made it there, you're pulling that state apart. You're pulling that promise apart. So the emotional impact is much higher than most people estimate. when you underestimate the future pain, thinking that it's going to feel better to get out of the present pain, you kind of lose on the equation. Instead of going, hey, you know what? We're in pain right now. Let's figure out a way through the pain. They say, well, I mean, I'm just going to get away from this pain, which doesn't get them away from the pain. And therefore, the emotional impact is pretty extreme. The third thing that happens is that many people get infected with the fear of failure. They ask the question, if I didn't succeed here, where else am I going to fail in life? Sometimes that infects them in other relationships, in their parenting role, in their work role. They have the feeling that they made this promise, and if they couldn't keep that, if they couldn't even keep that primary relationship alive, what does it mean about the rest of their life? And it cripples them in many ways, many times. It's not everybody, but many people are haunted by this fear of failure for the rest of their lives and how contagious it can be, because it's not kept in one place. It begins to spread and infect other areas of life. The fourth big piece is that why does this matter? Well, we live in a culture that says that things are disposable. And when people decide to work on their relationship, they are countering the culture of disposal. They're countering the culture that says, hey, if it's not working for you, bail. Throw it away. Get rid of it. Yes, I know that you promised to stay together forever in that wedding, but don't worry about that. Just dispose of it. That's where our culture has gotten, not just in important relationships, but overall. And so when people decide that it matters to work on the relationship, they're also running counter that culture of discard. And the fifth thing that I would point to is that people underestimate the real cost, the true cost of divorce. First, you have the legal costs. If you're not familiar, in the United States, the cost of divorce on average is somewhere between $10,000 and $20,000, depending on which place in the socioeconomic status you get. $10,000 to $20,000 looks very high when you think, oh, well, the attorney only asked for $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, maybe $5,000 retainer. And what you don't realize is that's the down payment. Because generally, the average cost is $10,000 to $20,000, depending on where you are socioeconomically. Now, that means that there are some that really do get divorced for a lower rate, because there are lots of people who run lots of money into their legal expenses. That's the first cost. But that's not the only cost. There's the asset loss. Retirements are cut in half. Houses are cut in half. Living potential, the money that we have to live day-to-day life, our daily income, cut in half when we do that. So suddenly, many households become two households to support, with half of the income coming into each one, somewhere in that neighborhood, plus the asset pool suddenly is halved. That has a long-term, if not lifetime, effect. The next loss is the time loss. The time lost in being in emotional pain, the time lost in actually taking care of the legal process, the time lost in taking care of all of the other pieces of unraveling something that is very complicated and emotional to unravel. There's a huge, significant time loss that doesn't end. You also have a time lost with kids, if you have kids. When you start dividing that out, that now you're not going to have as easy access. Those are real cost. That's why it matters. The other is the emotional cost, which I've already said has been underestimated, but to understand that there is a cost to that. You only have so much emotional energy, and if it is sucked away in one area, it's lost from other areas. And divorces tend to be ongoing for a number of years before you get to the place back to recovery. That's why this matters. Those are just some of the overarching practical matters, but there's a bigger one that I want to talk about, because this is, what do you do about that? What does it matter to have a why? I consider the shift to why to be a crucial piece of motivating and empowering your efforts. You need to know why you're doing this. So I ask the question, what is your why? And I want you to do a simple exercise to get to that place. So to ask yourself, what is my why? We start with an overall approach. What are the say 10 or 20 reasons why you're doing this. And so just pull out a piece of paper after you've listened to this. And, you know, if you're walking or exercising or driving, you know, wait until you've got a piece of paper. But I want you to just think about writing down your reasons why you want to save your relationship. Dig down a little bit. The first ones are going to come super easy. And the reason I want you to do 10 to 20 is it's going to make you dig around. It's going to make you really isolate the big ones. And sometimes you want to ask why multiple times on a why. So let's say I were to ask you, why do you want to save your relationship? And you would say, because I don't want to end up divorced. Why don't you want to end up divorced? Because, you know, I lived in a family where there is divorce. Why is it important that, you know, that what did that cause for you? Why? Well, I know how painful it was to lose my idea of being a family. Why was that so painful? Because I had come to count on something and I lost that. Why does that matter? Because I don't want my kids to have the same thing. So you can drill down on the whys. So the big thing here is to just kind of brainstorm. When you get to 5, keep going. When you get to 10, keep going. When you finally get to 15 or 20 and you just have no more, we're good. Because we're not going to keep all of those. We only want a few. I want you to now go back and cross the ones off that are fear-based. Fear-based is usually about what you're going to lose. I'm going to lose half of the income in the house. I'm going to lose half of the time or more with my kids, or maybe a little less, but I'm going to lose time with my kids. I'm going to lose a part of the family I love. I'm going to lose a community that I love. I'm going to lose friends out of this. Those are all losses. Once you cross off all of those fear-based, then you come up with a whole nother set. And those are your big whys. Sometimes the big whys are something like this. Because I made a promise and I want to honor it. Because I don't want to repeat the history of my family. Because I believe it's important to have kids grow up in a family they can count on. Because I believe it's important for a kid to have access to both parents all the time. Those are some pretty big whys. You list those on a piece of paper. Some of them can be very personal because I want to figure out what love means, what true love means. I want to figure out what it means to struggle through the tough times. Can you see how those resonate differently with you and how they feel differently in your gut? The fear ones get us charged up, and this is the big thing to recognize. They get us charged up initially because they scare us. But over time, our body does this interesting thing with fear. It gets used to it. Our body adapts. Our mind adapts. Our brain adapts. The chemistry adapts to fear. At some certain point, it loses its power. This is true with every emotion in our life. If we are consistently surrounded by a certain emotion, after a while, it just kind of becomes the background noise. It's no longer the motivator. Now, you can see this in one way. Let's think about when somebody gets a diagnosis from the doctor who says, hey, you know what? If you don't change your life, this is going to happen. That's really scary. And some people find that they react immediately. They start going to the gym and changing their diet and doing everything differently. And then they slowly drift back to the old stuff because it no longer scares them enough. It no longer scares them into changing. And so they revert back to the old patterns because they didn't come up with a why. But that same person, if they go, my gosh, if I stay sick, I won't see my kids through college, or I won't see that my grandkids, or I won't be able to finish this project, or there's so many different pieces. And I can tell you, because that was my story. When I got sick years ago, the doctor didn't tell me I needed to change my lifestyle. I knew it on my own. I was stressed out. I was not resting. I was not eating well. I was not exercising. I knew that myself. But the fear of dying was nowhere near the big thing of the reasons I wanted to live, my bigger whys. And that's why I think it's so important for you to identify your whys of why you want to restore your relationship, what you want to prove to yourself, to the world, to your spouse, to the family, to your kids, to everyone about why that's so important. So we get rid of all of those fear-based ones and we write down the big whys. These are the reasons why. Now, what do you do with those lists? That one list, the fear list, you can throw it away. The other list, your big whys, you want to keep it as part of your plan. You want to have it as a reminder when you're in doubt. And this is the thing. No matter how sure you are right now that you want to save your relationship, there will become a day, there will come an hour, there will come a moment when you wonder if it's worth it. When you doubt yourself, you doubt whether it's even worth all of the effort. And in those moments, you want a place to rely on, to drop back to. Kind of an analogy to this is that I keep a file of emails and cards and notes from people telling me how much they appreciate my help in their life, whether it's getting them unstuck or getting them to a more thriving place or helping them save their relationship. And I hold those back because there are days when it's frustrating to do this work. There are days when it's tough. And at the end of the day, I'm not sure what difference I made. And I can always go back to that file and remind myself of why I do this. That's the same kind of thing I want for you. So embedded in what I just said means that you need a written plan, right? That's another piece of this puzzle. That's a basic piece, back to basics. That's a basic piece you want to have. And in that written plan, one layer, in fact, I would say the first page should be your big whys. The list of the reasons why you want to save your relationship that are motivating you, that are pulling you, that speak to your soul, your deepest place, your biggest self, your best self, that call you to something better. This is why it's so important. What you're doing matters. And so first of all, make that shift to look back and realize this isn't just about this relationship. This is much bigger than that. Saving a relationship is transforming things in so many ways that have a ripple effect. Just like there's a negative ripple effect, think of the positive ripple effect. Think of the power it has for your family, for friends, for everyone around to say, wow, look at what happens when you get focused on making a transformation. Now, here's the other shift. You want to have not just your reasons why, but your how. We talked today about the reasons why. How you do that. What actions do you take? What do you do? That's part of what I've put into the system. I assure you that no matter how many podcasts you've listened to, you need to have something clear and definite to work through, a program. That's the how you do it. That's what I've put in the Save the Marriage system. Now, the Save the Marriage system is a collection of different modules. Those modules walk you right through from the quick start process all the way through to understanding what went wrong, how to correct it, and what to do if you get resistance along the way. Plus, how do you heal the anger and resentment? And what do you do about a midlife crisis? And how do you deal with infidelity? All those pieces are in that process. Included in that is even a way that you and your spouse can change how you do a conflict. I mean, all of these pieces are covered so that you have a thorough understanding. But to make sure it is truly actionable, right now, while we have the resources, I've got a couple of other pieces for you. One is a free week of my VIP virtual coaching program. You don't have to do that, but it's a free week. And as long as I can get people in that program, that's available. I can always cancel that if we get too many people in. But for right now, we have that available. And all you have to do is just say yes when I tell you about it. I don't sign you up by accident or trick you into signing up. It's very clear when I say, hey, let me help you a little bit with this. Join me for this free week. Get the resources you need. You just have to sign up for that. At the same time, we also have a team of coaches who can work with you, and we want to make sure you get started the best you can. And so we give you a 20-minute get started session. The way you say yes to that is you just go to your download page and you click the button that says, get me coaching. Then you give us a little information, we match you up, you get scheduled, and you have a 20-minute conversation with the coach to get you going. That is a powerful conversation. For a lot of people, that really gets them moving in a good way. And that's at no charge to you, no obligation, no charge to you. That's all part of the system, so you have the pieces in place. Those are bonuses that if we get overwhelmed, we have to pull away, but right now they're available. So the starting point for that is to go to savethemarriage.com and grab the system. Now, if you just want to cut to the front of the line, go to savethemarriage.com /grab. That's savethemarriage.com/grab, as in grab the system. So you can grab the system and jump right to the front of the line and get started with that. The big thing is to make sure that you get focused on your big whys. Let's take this down to basics and take this back to basics on what really matters. This is Lee Balkum wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.